This is the beginning of class 2.
Sashi Bhurki Jushin Etosham Vira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mitte Uwagi Dogo
karma comes from the Sanskrit word kara, meaning to do something. It's one of the most basic words in the Sanskrit language, kara. It probably came into English somehow. I don't remember. Anyway. The second lay means from. Unfortunately, they're spelled the same and sound the same, and they mean completely different things. Jikden means... Jikden is the Tibetan word for the world, the suffering world. In Sanskrit, it's just one word, loka. But in Tibetan, this is one of the early translations. They tried to catch the meaning. They made a new word. Jik means to be destroyed. Den means a basis. So your body is a jikden, and your world is a jikden. It's going to, sooner or later, it will collapse. It will fall apart. The world, meaning you, and your environment are both perishable things. That's jikden. So jikden means the world. It can also mean planet. And in Buddhism, a planet is a complicated thing. It's not just a round ball with people standing on it. Okay, that's a long story. I won't go into it. That's the third chapter of the Abhidhamma. But basically, it's got all these levels. There's many levels that we can't see. You know, there's the hell realms, there's preta realms. On each planet, they have their own hell realms, they have their own preta realms, they have their own partial hell realms, they have their own deity realms. You can't see almost any of it. Yeah.
The Amidala is an English type of translator, I imagine, right?
It's been, since it's the main book of Southern Buddhism, it's been translated many times by Sri Lankan scholars and things like that. There was a great French translation, Sri Lankan scholars and things like that. There was a great French translation, I don't speak any French. So,
but is there any English?
And then someone translated that into English, Leo Pudin. And that's the auto commentary.
Is that worth, you think?
It's pretty decent.
To
it's very
read?
Expensive. It's, I don't know, $200.
Oh, really?
Four.
Is it very big?
It's four volumes. And it's well done. I mean, I kind of like it. I haven't read much of it. And then we've translated this the first time on this commentary, but we haven't published it yet. We started 20 years ago, finished 10 years ago. Yeah, we never got it cleaned up. It's on the disc. You can look at it sometime. I can give you the disc.
But it's in English?
Yeah, with the root text and the commentary. Jigden, nato means various, multitude. Okay, nato means many different kinds. For example, a nato bema in the secret teachings is a special multicolored lotus. Has different colors. That's nato. So nato means all these different kinds. Ge means they come. So, the whole first line, the first line of the fourth chapter is the most important line in the whole thing. It says, what did the third chapter talk about?
The world it came from. Yeah.
And the beings in it.
Yeah.
And now, he's opening up the fourth chapter. It's called Samjorwa. It's called Building a Bridge in Tibetan. Good composition. It's supposed to relate it to the last chapter. So he says, and if you want to know where all these different planets come from, of the universe, and they have outlines of the planets, and you know, this... There's this galaxy over there, there's a galaxy over there, you know, that planet's named that planet's going to be around this long. All those different planets and all those different beings living on all those planets came from Lei. What's Lei?
Karma.
Okay. And that's really, you know, if, you know, last class we were saying if you came out of it, if you ever did come out of it, with a little inkling of what, you might have some strong... Let's say some decent foundation that you might continue on after you die, and that you were here before. That's enough. That was a big achievement. This class, you're supposed to now focus on actions, your actions, what you do. And then if you get some kind of instinct or feeling for how that creates your world, you know, how that actually determines your world and you, that you and your world are fluid, and they're blank, actually. They could have become anything, depending on your actions now. And what you have now, whether you like it or not, the things you like and the things you don't like, all came from karma. I mean, Geshe Dargi, my first teacher, he used to say, whether you like it or not, the things you like and the things you don't like, all came from karma. I mean, Geshe Dargi, my first teacher, he used to say, the feeling of the fan on your cheek is everything from there on up. Is from karma, you know, everything.
Right. Everything comes from karma. And karma is caused by ignorance and attachment and all that. But what caused ignorance and attachment? If mind is what? How do you define mind? In other words, what makes it going to karma?
It's like original sin, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been lousy forever, okay? I mean, if you're in the last class, you know that there was no beginning to your mind, because there was always that death that came just before your first moment of consciousness. And that death, because you have the kind of consciousness you have now, you had certain kinds of misperceptions of death, and therefore you had to take a new birth.
But there was a beginning for karmic.
No beginning. No beginning to all the universes. I mean, the universe has come and gone.
Mind, it's endless. And karma is endless.
I just did it. We'll talk about that. I know what you're saying. It's beginningless. It is beginningless.
So karma is beginningless.
Yeah. It is beginningless. You know, we've already proven that in the last course. We took, you know, it was like three, 4 months to prove that. The class was endless. The point was beginningless.
If mind
is beginningless, karma is beginningless, because karma creates karma.
So then if it's beginningless, it's endless.
Yeah.
Then how can we even think that that's possible?
What you can purify it. You can't destroy it. You can't destroy mind. You can put an atomic bomb in this
fire. No, I'm talking about karma. I'm not talking about mind.
Oh. There's a kind of Abhidharma.
It's like you cannot get rid of karma.
You can get rid of your ignorance, that's beginningless. You can get rid of suffering, that's beginningless. Just because it's always been that way doesn't mean it always has to be that way. Okay. Nele jiten natsa okay. So that's Vasubandhu's first statement about karma. Why is he saying that? He wants to point out, he's trying to point out two different things. And the first one is this. Who is he mostly fighting with? Do you remember? It's about the same people that Dharma
Tribe. Was it Charvakas?
No. I don't know where the Charvakas were in Vasubandhu's time. That's 200 years later. Mutekpa is a general word for non-Buddhist, a Hindu. And he's fighting with Hindus who believe in three different things.
Can you say that sentence, the whole sentence, before you go into the next
point? Yeah. Why don't I give you the reading? It's there. The multitude of worlds come from karma. I said here, deeds cause the multitude of worlds.
Which would you prefer us to know?
I'd use deeds cause the multitude of worlds. Because that's what's in your reading.
So what
cause
is
or cause that?
Cause.
So where does the basis to be destroyed fit in here?
That's the translation. That's the literal meaning of the Tibetan word for world.
Oh.
Jikten can also mean planet. Jikten ba means a layman. A worldly person. And then Paboga says, well, Jikdenba means anybody that hasn't seen emptiness. It's a world of yeah. Anyway, three things that I almost said Dharmakirti. Vasubandhu is fighting against three ideas. One of the main reasons he wanted to write that first line was because people in India, when he was there, believed in these three things. One of these two things.
Yeah, they pants it back.
Say, Jitapa.
Jitapa.
So, and Wangchu. Okay, Gyu Dakpa, Gyu means cause, and Dakpa means unchanging. Gyu means cause, and Dakpa means unchanging. The second one is Tso means main, or principle. That's the word for principal teachings of Buddhism in that little book's title. Tso means main, or principle. You can translate it as primal energy. Right? Primal energy. And then the third one is Wangchuk. Wangchuk is the Tibetan translation of Ishvara. And you can think of it as Indra. It doesn't much matter. Indra. Indra is a Hindu god, Hindu deity. Those were the three big ideas around in Vasubandhu's time. For what?
Existence.
Where the world came from. All right? Where the world came from. Yudhapa was impersonal. Yudhapa was like a Big Bang Theory or something like that. Okay? It's a cause, but nothing came before it. Nothing caused it. Okay? It was the first cause of all.
So it's an uncaused cause.
You could say uncaused cause.
Original cause.
Unchanging cause. If it's uncaused, it's unchanging. So it's the cause of all causes. Not necessarily a being. So is like, it's hard to describe, but it's like a being, but it's not like a being. It's the energy in the universe that creates things.
It's not the energy itself.
It's hard to describe because it doesn't exist. But but anyway, it's for example, they believed there were 25 different divisions. Samkhya school. They believed there were certain numbers of existing phenomena, and there was this energy or being who you can say primal energy. Okay, and he had a permanent part and an impermanent part. The impermanent part does things and makes the world and things like that. It's like a primal. It's an energy behind the universe.
The force.
They're kind of vague ideas.
The force.
Are very well developed. The ideas are hard to discuss. This is like the cause of all causes. This is like the force, really. That's not bad translation. And Wangchuk is, that's the creator god. okay, a creator being. All right, that's a guy who, you know, I think they say he stirred up the ocean with a big stick, and I don't know what happened. Something. It's. I don't think of him as feminine. I think it's a him. I think Ishvara is. Well, I think a lot of Tibetans say Indra. Indra is actually somebody else, but they get. I mean, if you go to India and try to ask the difference between Indra and Ishvara, you know, it's pretty confused, man. There's 200. There's hundreds of Hindu. The Hindu pantheon is thousands of deities, and if you ask a Gujarati what's the difference between, you know, Krishna and Ishvara and Indra, you know, you'll get, well, he's blue and he's, you know, but that's about it, you know, it's all confused now. As far as I can tell, I'm not a very good, I don't know much about it. The older schools were better, and they're well presented in the Majjhimika schools. You can study the real old Hindu schools better in Majjhimika than you can if you go to India nowadays. So those are those three things, according to the non-Buddhists, cause the world.
Didn't you say Soa was also being?
They think of him as a being.
And so that's the difference between Soa and Wangcho.
I don't know, Mark.
Oh.
This is like, he's more personalized, how's that? This is like a Yuzo. Sometimes he's not personalized. It's a primal energy that exists behind all things.
Sounds like paganism.
Like what?
Like paganism. That's what they believe.
Yeah, it's kind of. It's like that. This is Gutsu is explained better in Madhyamika than I'm explaining it now. But anyway, there's these three things. These two are unchanging. Maybe that's a good thing to say. This one is changing. These two are unchanging. This one is changing.
How is Soa unchanging?
Excuse me?
How is Soa unchanging?
He's just supposed to be unchanging. He
this is a being?
Yeah. This is what the Hindus say.
Soa is a being, isn't it, dude?
She asked me that. Generally, you think of him as a being, but it's not very clear. I'll check. Gyutso is not. It's like a being. But it's like part of the stuff. It's a kind of energy. Number three is definitely a being. Number one is definitely not a being. Number two is. I'll check and see if it says being anywhere. I mean, it doesn't say being, but when they describe him in the Samkhya school, it sounds sort of like a being. One of the 25 qualities is being, capital B, like Shirikikibo. Anyway, so those are the three things that they said the world came from. There are two arguments against those three, and you already know them. Why? What's the big argument? Against this one. We can say argument A. There were a lot of them, but I don't know. Do you remember any of them?
I just remember the one. I mean, I remember the one where it couldn't be, you know, like a personal being, because that being would have had to suffer.
Yeah, that was one of Dhammakirti's. Because he's perfect. To become perfect, you have to suffer.
Right.
It's permanent. He never was suffering before. He didn't change. He never changed. That's not the argument for Vasubandhu. Vasubandhu is concentrating on this argument that a being could have made the world in one shot. He could have made all of history in one moment. Since each period doesn't depend on the period before it, you know, the 19th century doesn't depend on the 18th century to happen. You can skip straight from the 17th to 19th century. 17th to 19th century can happen at the same time. There's no reason for there to be, what do you call it?
Stages
or any progression in time.
Linear.
It doesn't have to be linear. It'll be one instant in time because he can create the whole thing in one moment. There's no need for him to. The fact that it takes time, the fact that the events of the 17th century have to cause the events of the 18th century is a problem if you believe in a creator God. It shouldn't require that. A God should be able to, someone who creates the universe should be able to create it and then it would just end in the same instant. There's no reason for it to, for things, something to have to come before something else to make it happen. Because he's making everything happen. Those things aren't causing each other. He's causing everything. And that, you know, it sounds silly. It's actually quite correct. You just have to get used to it. You have to think about it. If you know, we're all made by a person and doesn't depend on any causes, you know, he could just make it all, everything could happen in one moment and get it over with, you know. The cavemen and the dinosaurs and everything else could happen in, and the space shuttle could all get it over with in the same second. That would be a quality. It doesn't have to happen in stages. The reason it happens in stages is that something has to cause it. The argument against these two, both of these are supposed to be unchanging. And if the cause of things was unchanging, then things have to be unchanging. Things could never get old. Things could never decay. Things could never rise again. Things could never fluctuate. There would be no fluctuation of anything in the universe. Nothing would fluctuate because it was caused by a permanent, unchanging thing. The idea, why does the wall get older? Because the energy that started it had a limit. And the energy that started it is wearing out. It's like a curve like that, right? And it created the wall, and then the energy is like dissipating even as we talk. The wall is disintegrating as we talk. And you can see that. Sooner or later, this wall must fall down. Hopefully, we'll not be in here at the time. And that's fluctuation. A permanent thing which never changes or never goes like that couldn't cause that. If the cause is like gets strong, creates a thing and then weakens, then the thing has to do that too. If the thing is doing that, if the thing is getting stronger and then disintegrating, then the cause have to have been the same. Therefore, these two can't cause the world. Those are the main arguments. What do you care? There are things called dipas. You know dipa? Dipa? Dipa means shadow, but it's obscuration, mental shadow. And we have them. And they come from your, they are the presuppositions with which you grow up. They are the things you hear from your childhood. And now your mind is soaked in them, and you don't even notice it. You don't know it. So arguments like these sound a little funny, or they sound like not very relevant or something, but that the dipa we have is that we really do believe that the world came from some being, because that's the way we grew up. It just happens to be what people told us as we grew up. There's no evidence for it. There's no logic to it. There's no reasonableness to that statement, that there's some guy that we can't see and he made the world. It doesn't make any sense. But since we grew up with it, we take it seriously. You know, God is spelled with capital G. It's on the coins and on the money. You know, it pervades your world, and you believe it. It's part of you believes it. But that's a jipa, and you have to try to break that down because if you want your world to become happy without suffering, if you want to remove the suffering in your world, you have to come to a real strong intellectual understanding that your world comes from your actions. From what you do. And as long as the other thought is, you know, 10% of your mind, taking up 10% of your mind space, you won't really act properly because you don't really believe it. You know, 10% or 20% of your mind doesn't quite accept it, so you won't follow the rules of karma. And then you'll never get out. You always have some suffering. So that's, you have to work on that. It's important to know where the world came from. It's not just philosophers arguing and Buddhists fighting with the non-Buddhists and things like that. It's something you have to just give up all the old ideas, and you have to think, you know, this world came from what I did, and my future depends precisely on what I do now.
I'm trying to understand how these three points fit into the whole chapter overview of karma. So is this the idea is these schools had this position? So to begin his chapter on karma, he wanted to refute the nature of existence before he moved on to other things.
He's trying to. What's his whole ningu? What's purpose. The ultimate goal? Yeah. What's he trying to do? He's trying to get you out of suffering. So he has to show the process by which suffering was created. And basically, your suffering is your world and you. So he's trying to explain the process by which this world is created and where you came from. This is actually tied up with the Four Noble Truths. This is all part of the First Noble Truth, suffering. The world is suffering. Yeah.
So, if I may pick up on what John was saying, an appropriate title for this section with these three would be the prevalent theories during Vasubandhu's time of creation, or at all times, so the arguments against karma.
By the way, I didn't speak much about it last time, and I wanted to, but, you know, people ask me, why don't we just buy one of those translations that come out of universities and use those, you know, and I say, well, I have a problem with most of it. What is it? Here's one of the big problems is this. If you read Chankyo Rupa Dorje's explanation of the four schools, you have to think of the four schools as, these are a design by an omniscient being to try to relate to all the possible kinds of beings there are in the world throughout all history. He's using these four. You know, in other words, he's using those four, and the first chapter of the Abhidharma says it, because that's the nature of people's minds. There's four kinds of mindsets that can relate to each one of those schools. And it's not a historical thing. It's not like, Nagarjuna, 200 AD, he thought up Madhyamika, and then, 400 years later, Dharmakirti, he had a good idea, and he added that. And it's not like that. It's an omniscient being designing four schools for four states of minds of being. He can see 2,000 years later what people are going to need, and he designed it that way. Normally, it's not just a historical debate between Charvakas and Buddhists in 8th century India. They tend to be universal wrong ideas that beings have throughout history. Otherwise, the Buddha wouldn't have designed it.
It's like the three most likely three possibilities karma, if you don't believe in karma.
Very common.
Whether those days or even now.
Yeah. It seems to be a thing that people have. They tend to want to believe in these things.
The three greatest misconceptions about creation.
Okay. We happen to be, our culture is pretty much into this one, in the religious side, and I would say into, which one for the Big Bang, if you're a scientist? Maybe Gyutakpa. Maybe you're into the big, cause of all causes.
It used to be that, but now that it's saying the bang, 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 it just has always been going along, it just goes out, the explosion goes
I can never see why if there was one Big Bang, there couldn't be one before it, so that's one half of what he wants to do with that statement. He's trying to do two things. As usual, we call Namchiki Gupta and Yongchiki Gupta. He's trying to say the world didn't come from those things. The world didn't come from those things. Your office at work didn't come from one of these things. You made it, and you have to eat it. And you got to get in that mind frame. It's not like a guilt trip. It's like intelligence. So you can have a better office later. Okay? That's what the world didn't come from. Then on the other side, what's he going to say? Now here's where it came from. It's as usual. There's a negative goal and a negative point to a Buddhist statement, and there's a positive point. He's denying that the world came from these things, and he wants to prove that it came from karma. Say, Deni.
Deni.
Semba.
Semba.
Pangdeche.
Pangdeche.
Deni.
Deni.
Semba.
Semba.
Pangdeche.
Pangdeche.
Deni means that, meaning karma. That, and then Semba. You're going to get to know Semba very well, okay? What's the Tibetan word for mind?
Sem.
Sempa is not the same as Sem. Okay, be careful. Sem means mind. Sempa means a totally different thing. People get it confused all the time. Sempa is a movement of the mind. It's called, in Tibetan, it's called Yula Chopa. Sem Yula Chopa. Sem means mind. Yula means object of the mind. La Chopa means it turns the mind to the new object. Semyula Chopa. That's the, and the function of it, the function of Semba is to motivate physical and verbal karma.
So they talk about the karma of body, speech, and mind. It's the karma of mind that generates the karma
yeah,
of body and speech.
Yeah, that's the whole point. This is his next line. I'll repeat it. We'll talk about it more. So the virtual karma, you know, the real karma that's running things is Semba. Semba is the movement of the mind.
What do the emotions fit into that? Body, speech, mind?
They are different... They are different mental functions that will be linked with Semba at all times. Semba is always present in the mind. And according to the Abhidharma, there's five mental functions that are always present in the mind. They never go away. They will never go away.
So they're part of the movement of the mind, whereas the
mind
speech,
is always moving.
Whereas the speech and the body are separate.
Yeah.
So, separate.
Yeah. So the motivator, the source, is Semba. Semba. Dun means and.
A-N-D.
Okay. Dung means dang. Dang means and. And Dei-Che means what it does, what it motivates. Okay. What it motivates. And then the next line says,
Semba,
Yiki,
Yiki,
Leyeno.
Leyeno.
Semba,
Semba,
Yiki,
Yiki,
Leyeno.
Leyeno.
My voice. It's not Semba, it's like
the
BP.
It's not a B and it's not a P. You'll have to come to Tibetan class to learn about that. Okay. Semba means that, we'll call it movement of the mind, okay? Is yin. You go to the end of a Tibetan sentence for the verb. Yikile. Yikile means karma of the mind. Karma of the mind. So how do those three lines go? So try to digest this. All the planets in the world come from karma. Karma is when your mind moves and anything that motivates in your speech or body. The movement of the mind is what mental karma is. That's his first three lines. He's setting up the whole presentation of karma right there. When your mind moves, you commit mental karma. And those movements inspire you to say something like a bad joke and hurt someone's feelings, which I do all the time, or move your arms, steal something, give something, kill something, protect life. But it's all, the driver is up in the mind, Semba. Okay? Movement in the mind, mental karma. So mental karma drives bodily karma and verbal karma. Those are the only three kinds there are. Those are what we call the three doorways. That's the only three ways you can express yourself.
Would you say that sentence again?
Does it happen also when you are at the Buddha home?
Yeah. In this school, there's a thing called pure karma. But that's a long story.
You still have the movement.
You still think. There was a school in Tibet that said the Buddha didn't have a mind. Because they had a problem with that. But of course the Buddha thinks. He thinks in a different way. His thoughts are spontaneous. But he still... He still thinks.
So that karma is only caused by impure minds or stained minds.
Depends on which school you're in. The Madhyamika and lower Madhyamika schools talks a lot about it, and we'll talk about it later. They say it has to be. They say there's two kinds of mental karma. One is motivated by kleshas, and one is not. Those that are motivated by kleshas are dirty karma, and those that are not motivated by karmas by kleshas are pure karma. There's a long story.
Could you just run through that?
Yeah. The world. I'm going to paraphrase, okay?
Yes.
The worlds of the universe come from karma. Karma is any movement of the mind and the things which it inspires. That refers to bodily and verbal action. You know, the things which it inspires. That refers to
that. And yet, this
refers to.
Karma with your body and karma with your mouth.
And this is, you know, this is a very different sentence than the sentence we had two courses ago when we just had, you know, a six-word original root sentence that said karma is the movement of the mind and what follows. So what's the difference? What are they trying to say?
Same thing. Any simple dimension. Same thing. And the third sentence there is, when the mind moves, that's what mental karma is. That's mental karma. That's karma of the mind.
So what do they mean by that? When the mind moves, when it's changing? What is it?
Having a thought. But I it's described in scriptures as when the mind goes to another object.
When what?
When the mind moves to another object. When the mind shifts. I like to go like that and say, you know, that's kind of mental karma. You know, when your mind goes like that, the shifting. And the most minute shifting
so what
of the
if,
mind.
What
you
if
that karma by the millisecond.
Okay, so if the mind, I mean, to me, the mind is, you know, in a pure way, or in an early stage, you know, before we get into judgment, we're in learning, you know, a child, right? Sees something, tries to understand, what is it? You know, it seems to me that one of the primary functions of the mind is not judgment, or is good, but, you know, doing something bad, but is trying to understand the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does that cause bad karma?
I didn't say bad. I said karma.
But you know what I mean?
Don't think of karma as bad. Don't think of karma as bad.
Okay, but
don't even think of karma as... I mean, there are pure kinds of karma.
It seems like a lot of what mind does is trying to understand.
That's neutral. You know, if you're trying to understand the causes of AIDS to cure a lot of people, it's a great virtue. Now, if you're trying to understand how to make money, how to cheat your friends, you know, that's a non-virtue. Trying to understand. If you're just a pure scientist and you just want to know, that's called neutral. There is such a thing. Okay, one more, and then we gotta go.
Isn't it the case that the mind, when you're talking about the movement of the mind, that it's a lot of what is contained in that is stuff that we would consider unconscious in the sense of when we say a thought is something we have a self consciousness of having a thought. Oh, I'm hungry, what time is it? But they're also, from my understanding, like very minute things that are happening on what we would consider a subconscious level.
He talks about that. I mean, some of the books talk about that. They say, for example, sometimes you can be speaking and not thinking I'm speaking. I mean, they describe a subconscious awareness that you're speaking and that is also karma. Okay.
Finally, the mental karma is motivating physical and verbal karma.
It's running the machine, yeah.
Right. So, does a mental karma only produce either a verbal karma, a physical karma, or another mental karma? If you don't act on it, let's just say, then it produces instead another mental karma?
If you control yourself or something like that?
Yeah, if you have the mental karma to say something to somebody
and
you don't say it for one whatever reason,
right.
It didn't produce a verbal karma.
Well, I'm going to talk about that right now.
Okay, so
no, it can't, no.
Does it can it do
yeah.
two at the same time? Can
right,
it create
absolutely.
Another mental karma
yeah.
and yet a verbal
absolutely,
karma?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fine.
Actually, it can create four different results, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do one little thing, then we'll take a break. I'm actually being very good about telling you. I have time. So if I were to ask you what are the two most basic kinds of deeds, what would you say? I mean, based on that last line I gave you.
Say the question again.
It's called Sembele and Sambele. Sembele is mental karma.
Mm-hmm.
Sambele is... You can think of sembele as thoughts, and sambele is what you thought to do. Does it make it... Does it give you some feeling? One is thinking to do something, and one is what you do by thinking, meaning verbal and physical. So there's this big division. Over here is mental karma, which is thinking karma. And over here is what they call thought karma, meaning thinked.
Having
what
thought.
What you thought to do, which means mental, which means verbal and physical karma.
Are you saying that this has already happened after you've had the thought, then you speak it and you act it?
Yeah. And so the speaking and the acting are all considered the second type of karma, motivated karma. And the first side is called motivating karma. which is mental karma. So they got this big division. So if somebody asks you on a homework, what are the two kinds? You can say motivating karma and motivated karma. How's that? You see, one is the thought that's actually running the truck, and one is the truck that's being run. Okay, the deeds that come out.
You're calling these the two kinds of karma? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah, the most basic division of karma. There's motivating karma, which is the thoughts. And then there's the physical and verbal deeds that motivating karma motivates.
Yeah. So we consider it just as bad to generate like a tremendous amount of hate towards somebody, even if you don't kill them or kill them or anything. Is it considered just as bad for your...
There's a lot of detail about that. I will talk about it. Okay. We'll talk about it. That's in the... I think it's in the 8th or 9th class. We're going to talk about how does your mind frame affect the severity of the deed. And they talk a lot about it. Is anger itself a karma? No, is ignorance itself a karma? That's a big subject. Is it virtuous or non-virtuous or neutral? Ignorance itself is very big argument.
It's not caused, right? You've always had it.
That doesn't mean it's not caused. In fact, that might be a reason why it had to be caused.
Well, how could you have always had it if it was
It kept causing earlier instances caused later instances. Okay. Are you cold?
Yes.
No.
People in the back will fall.
I'll
turn it down to
the... You can shut it off.
You don't have to write it to that. You have to write any of that. Say, number riche.
Number riche.
Number riche.
Number riche.
Mayimba.
Mayimba.
Number riche.
Number riche.
Number riche.
Number riche.
Mayimba.
Mayimba.
You know, this was the first book I ever read in Tibetan, and I remember it. I would, Rinpoche would teach me in the early morning. He would go to school in the morning, he'd come back in the evening. I had to spend the whole day trying to figure out what he said. He didn't speak any English at the time. And when I got to this, it was very difficult. Namba Rikche means, I have translated it as communicating as an adjective, okay? And I'll explain it. Namba Rikche, what's Mayimba? Kindly know.
Mayimba.
Not communicating.
Yeah, non-communicating. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, it's pretty confusing.
You mean communicative?
I'll tell you what it means. It means communicating the intent of the doer, or not. It's form, physical form, color and shape, which communicates the intention of the doer. Of the person who does it. And I'll give you an example.
Okay. Which one are you talking about?
Namba Rikche is communicating. It means if you walk into a church and you see somebody there on their knees going like this, that's Namba Rikche. Why? It communicates to you that they have some spiritual intentions. As you look at them, you may be wrong, of course. They may be waiting to meet their crack dealer or something. But normally this is a number of chicken soup. You know, all those movies where the mafia guys pray next to each other and plan hits and stuff. Not like that. It means the actual shape of the person, the outline of what the person's doing, communicates to you something about their intentions. Correct. The other example is prostration. You know, if somebody's standing here and getting down on the ground, you know, you from that picture of that person communicates to you that he has some good intentions. That's called Namba Rikche.
You said through color and form?
It's actually the shape. You can think of it as the outline of that person. In this school, we'll talk about it more. So the actual picture of that person doing that thing communicates to you that he has some virtuous intents.
Would like people dancing would communicate happiness or something like that?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So when you say communicates, in this sense, accurately communicates?
Well, they don't even get into it. You see, skip schools, okay? You're not back in Prama anymore. is Abhidharma, very basic, you know. They don't even talk about, well, he might be fooling you.
So it triggers triggers some kind of understanding in you, whether that's correct or not.
They don't discuss it.
So a shape that triggers an understanding in you.
Yeah. A shape which allows you to impute. Can I say impute? Some kind of motivation on the person who's
performing. So does it have to be of a person, or could be at a tree? Could it be? Does it have to be?
The wind is blowing a tree, and the tree's bent over.
I'm going to talk about that after the break. Namur Dikchen Mayimba. By the way, it's fine if you cough. I respect that you came, and that's fine. If you want to get a drink, you can. But we're going to break real soon. Namur Dikchen Mayimba. Is a very interesting idea that only the Abhidharma schools have. And they believe that when you perform some very good deed or bad deed, some kind of form, some kind of extra, what do you call that thing in the New Age stuff?
Halo?
Aura. Aura. Yeah. It's like an aura. An aura forms in you the moment after the Namur Dikchen. And I'll give you an example. A monk goes before an abbot, a layman, and he gets down, and the abbot cuts his hair, and the monk takes his vows. He repeats them 3 times, he has his vows. Okay. As he's repeating those vows after the abbot, you know, as he's taking his vows, that's Namur Dikchen. If you came in the room suddenly and saw what he's doing, you say, oh, somebody's taking vows, that's great. He has a virtuous intention. But what happens when he gets up and he walks out of the room and you meet him?
He's still got a buzz.
He still has this, what they call, aura is not a bad word, actually. Because they describe it as being like light.
A glow.
As stretching from the bottom of the feet to the top of the head. Uh-huh. As staying with the person. Doesn't make him fatter or heavier, they say. there's a question, you know. And it's somehow with him. And it's actually an outline.
And how long does it last?
Well, in that case, it lasts till he dies. I mean, if he took a vow till he dies, they say, this school says, the nature of that vow is that it's that outline that stays with him throughout his life.
Yeah, that's it.
This idea is not accepted by any other Buddhist school. But
I like it.
I think it's a very useful idea. I used to think of it as a cosmic photograph, you know, that when I did something good or bad, because we grew up with this God idea, right? Mm-hmm. That someone's taking a picture, you know, and that picture somehow stays somewhere. You know, like, I better watch out what I'm doing, because there are these pictures being taken, you know. It's not a, maybe that's the kind of thought they had in mind when they described this kind of Namur Dikchen Mayimba. An example is the vows of a monk. You know, what are the vows of a monk? How do they stay on me? Where are they?
It could be like saying energetically you're affected. Is that the idea?
They're trying to say there's some kind of energy which is sticking on you, but it's matter.
But the idea is not that you change your own energy, but you get something from outside?
No, it's like a cloak.
It comes to you from the outside.
Yeah, and it's actual physical matter
that
we can't see.
Well, what are we, collecting cloaks all the time? Or they merge with each other? I don't know.
You can with the Abhidharma.
Is this to destroy the
Go to Sri Lanka and talk.
I mean, you can destroy the Sora by doing bad deeds.
We're going to talk about it a lot.
Does this have anything to do with creating different bodies?
No, that's totally different. Okay.
Do they consider light matter?
Yeah. It's one of the kinds of color. It's one of the divisions of color.
And, I mean, if the monk degenerates, breaks their vows, does the cloak degenerate, or does the...
Yeah, it disappears.
Can you take a picture of it, though?
And they can destroy it. You know, you can damage it, too. When a monk breaks his vows, it's damaged.
Someone told me you can take a picture and you can see the aura, you can see the colors. They say you can't see it.
No, they say you cannot see it. It's Namur Dikchen Mayimba.
With your eyes.
You can't look at Michael Roach when he's dressed up.
No, but they say with a special camera.
Oh, he's a monk. Yes.
Yeah, curly and photography.
Yeah,
the Russians
are curly.
They take the leaf.
Okay, take a break quick.
Michael, have you ever heard of Colombian photography? I just heard it the other day.
Sounds expensive.
Oh, it's been around a long time.
All these neat computer things I want.
This is called not communicating?
Yeah. It's the moment, it starts the moment after he takes the vow. The moment after he does the communicating, then he stands up and he's walking around, and that somehow that vow is still
stuck. Not communicating in the sense that he's not doing anything specific that would make you interpret.
Right.
But you see those
I used
things.
To call it uninterpretable form. But it was too long. In other words, you can't look at me, if I'm dressed as a layman, and you look at me, there's nothing that can tell you that I have this virtue intent that I have vows sticking on me.
That's not
but you can communicate it to yourself.
Yeah. Not apparent.
What about this form? But there.
We got to have five qualities, which you're going to have to memorize, actually, of this stuff. And we're going to do that after this. That'll be your last thing. I like the idea. I think it's a useful idea. What are we going to call this stuff?
Which stuff?
What translation do you guys like?
Which stuff?
Non-communicating?
Uninterpretable.
Yeah, I like
uninterpretable. No, because you see it, though, is the point.
Subtle.
It's interpretable to the person.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Subtle.
I like that.
Not
what's its relationship to other people?
Well, I'll tell you what. Often he's describing it.
Oh, okay.
So this stuff. Well, we got stuff in the last code.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, kind of. All right. So, yeah.
What are these things?
We're describing. I'm now going to give you five qualities of this aura.
The second one.
But what are these two things? These rijays, rijays.
The two kinds of verbal. I should have said that. I didn't say that. Verbal or physical karma. I should have said that. I didn't say that.
Two kinds of
good question.
Two kinds.
Verbal and physical karma can be divided into those two.
You're not saying that one corresponds to verbal and one corresponds to physical.
No, I'm not saying that. See, there's a verbal rikti and namarikti mahima, and there's a physical namarikti and namarikti mahima. And you can guess what they are, you know? Like the words of the monk speaking, as his lips move, you know, that's supposed to be the verbal one. You know, and the form of him bending down and clasping his hands, those are communicating. And non-communicating is the moment after he's got that aura of that vows. The verbal thing takes its own aura, the physical thing takes its own aura. Like that.
So every...
I'm going to... Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me finish, then you'll... I think I know what you're going to ask. This all come back like that. That's the verse, first part of the verse. Yengdang seme bai yang. That's the first quality. Okay, the first quality is yang dan sami fa yang. Yang means literally distraction.
First quality of what? Of non-pariki?
Now we're describing the five qualities of this very special idea that only Abhidharmas have, which is that there's some kind of aura is a nice word, I like it. Because they actually explain it as a kind of light or that you can't see, you know. It sticks with the person, the whole outline of his body. Sometimes they say it's like the oil in an oil seed, like an oil in the oil in a sesame seed. It's just like
permeates
it. You know? So something like, and it's light. It is color, but you can't see it and stuff like that.
Could you just call it an energy field?
I don't kind of like aura actually. Aura is almost pretty close to that. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Now, is this only for good, or can you have a bad aura?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
So yang means distraction. So the first quality of number nikchei mahime sukh, the first quality of this special aura, is that even when you're not thinking about it, it's there. Even when your mind is on something totally different, that still stays. And that the root text says, even in periods of distraction. But it doesn't mean, you know, here distraction is a little bit strong. It just means even when I'm not aware of my vows, my monk's vows, that the aura is still there. Yendang, seme pa yang. Seme pa means, what does sem mean?
Mind,
not semba, right? Now we're back to sem. What does mepa mean? Kali, you know.
Mepa?
Yeah.
Not.
Mepa is a negative.
It's a negative, yeah. Not. It's you have it even when you don't have a mind. Now, is that possible? Not to have a mind. Is it possible for a living being not to have a mind? It says you have it even when your mind is missing. And so the Abhidharmas say, of course, it's you must have a mind. We proved that in the last class. Right. You never lose your mind, literally. Yeah. So it means there are certain kinds of deep, deep meditation in which your mental processes are almost stopped. And that's called Senmepayi. It's called mindless, I shouldn't say mindless, no mind meditation. But it doesn't mean that your mind is gone. It doesn't mean that your mind is stopped. It means that your mind is on an extremely subtle level. So even in those states, at auras with that person. So not only, that's the second quality. So in the first quality, he's not thinking about it. But the second quality is that even when your mind is almost shut down, you still have that aura. It doesn't go away. So even in periods of deep meditation, very deep meditation. There's this big debate, you know, when you're seeing emptiness directly, do you still have bodhicitta, for example? Is bodhicitta supposed to remain mind? There's these big debates, you know, do certain mental states get lost when you're in deep meditation? So that was the second quality. Geta mige means it has an ethical component. It is either virtuous or non-virtuous.
What's the Tibetan word now?
Geta mige kamindam.
Geta mige.
It's either virtue or non-virtue.
Gedang
mige. Yeah, it's either a good deed or a bad deed. There are things in the universe which are morally neutral. This pen is morally neutral. We call it tangyong. It's not a good deed, it's not good. You know, it's not a good thing or it's not good or bad. It's not evil or good. But namrache mayimbe su. This aura has to be one or the other. What's an example of a bad aura? In the Abhidharma later, Abhidharma in the fourth chapter gives a whole presentation on vows. I'm not going to do it in the Karma chapter. I'm going to do it as a separate course for you. But it describes all the vows you can take, all the morality vows you can take. And it describes anti-vows. And that's, they give two examples. One is to say, okay, I swear I'll be a butcher for the rest of my life. You know? Like you go sign up for butcher school and say, okay, I'm signing up because I intend to, you know, slit animals' throats for the rest of my life. You know? Which was, you know, existed. And then that guy, when he walks into the school and he signs a paper and says, I'm going to sign up, I commit myself to this occupation, he gets a namrache mayimbe performs on him. And that's called an anti-vow. The other one is when you join the military. Okay? And you say, I will fight, you know, I agree to kill people in defense of my country. And that's a classical example of a namrache mayimbe su, the vow form. You get an aura, an anti-vow aura forms on you. And then when you are dismissed from the service, it disappears.
All of your examples have been about vows.
Yeah.
Are there situations where...
I'm trying to think. Normally, they're talking about it being... Normally, it comes up in discussions of very severe karma. You know, I'll have to see.
Well, if you talk
but
about...
But even in cases of a prostration, they say. Or even in case of a lie, I think... some kind of photograph is taken and it stays with you. Is it karma itself? You know, is it the transmission karma? No. That's not how karma boomerangs according to them. But let me check because I'm not sure. I have the feeling it has to be a pretty severe. I think the motivation has to be pretty strong for the aura to follow. I'm not sure.
So what happens at death?
Well, it depends on... It disappears.
It disappears.
Yeah.
As far as joining...
In the case of the vow.
As far as joining the military, is it totally considered no difference in value whether it's a very just reason, you're really trying to save people's lives, or whether it's...
We're going to reach that. We're going to have it in this course. I'll say it. It's coming. They actually describe this question separately. And what is the responsibility of a person who participates even on a with a virtuous intention or even as a non-combatant? You know, how much karma does he collect relative to the people actually shooting the gun? That's really disgusting.
Doesn't this idea of what's good and what's bad tie into the emptiness and there is no good and bad, so this whole concept that we're structuring here of good and bad is
the whole point of the karma course. is to oh boy, I'm mixed up here. If you want to have any kind of heresy, it's heresy. Because of emptiness, there is good in that. Okay. I mean, we're going to get to that. That's why we actually made a separate class on it. I mean, that's going to be one class of this course. It's going to be devoted simply to that subject.
I have to get up all of the things.
Never, never. I heard this story. I read this story in the book about Buddhism. And the lady said she got caught taking towels out of a hotel from a Buddhist conference. And she said it doesn't matter. They're all empty anyway. And that's the ultimate ignorance. You know, that's it's because they're empty. It does matter. You know, and that's another story. Okay. Okay, the next quality. What are we up to?
Number four
is Jadel. Jadel means continues on in a stream.
Jadel or Jadrel?
Jadel. Jindel, actually.
Jindel.
And what it means is they argue about. What it means is it continues on after the moment of, the first moment is nivarikche. I take the vow, I'm saying something. If someone sees my lips moving, they can interpret me. But then, you know, somehow it streams on. It follows on after me. Even though I move, you know, that
the auras.
Yeah, follow. Streaming on, following on. It's not like a discrete moment and then it's gone or something mm-hmm. like that. It continues. As I walk around, it goes around.
It continues in space and time.
Yeah.
Does it dissipate over time?
They don't say anything like that. I mean, if I take a vow for life, then if I keep it, then when I die, it disappears.
So if you take a vow for two lives, it'll...
There is no such vow. I mean, there's no such Abhidharma vow.
So if you took the bodhicitta vow, it would only last for one life, and you'd have to start all over
there's
again.
They don't have bodhicitta vow. There's no such question in the Abhidharma system.
In this system, yes.
Yeah, there's no such thing. So they don't talk about it. There is no vow in the Abhidharma system which doesn't end when you die.
What about when you say, from now until attaining the heart of enlightenment, I take refuge?
That sounds, I don't know. I don't remember. Let me check.
Do
I don't know
if that formula for refuge?
I understand, yeah. Maybe it would stay with you for more than one life. It's a good question. I'll check. Seemed to me it would, but I don't know how.
But maybe they just say, you know, it's like kind of saying I have that really strong intention.
Okay, fifth quality is Juwan Chimbu Gyu Cheng Nin, which means, do you remember that discussion we had about the elements? Wasn't there a
talk here? The wall is degenerating faster than we thought.
I wonder if
it changed into that. Hmm.
I hope not. I was wondering if somebody wouldn't just walk.
Because there's a hook, look.
That was Tara, wasn't it? Wasn't that Tara? Green Tara?
Yeah.
Did it go into the house?
Yeah, there's several of them.
Maybe it was sold.
We have time.
Well, we don't have a semibar, do we? I hope to gain one. Okay, anyway, the last... We talked about the wall and the four elements inside, you know, acting in the wall. The hardness, the wetness, the non... You know, the four qualities. Satchu Menon, earth, water, fire, and wind. Okay. And that actually they describe actual physical energies within all... physical matter, and that it wasn't just some silly thing that they thought there was no fires burning in the wall or something like that. So the last quality of Namrakche Mayimbe Sukh is that it has those four elements as its causes. It's made of those four elements. So it's physical matter, basically. So this is a very special idea.
Do all four have to be present?
In the Abhidharma system, all matter has all four, and some other stuff too. And it's just the predominance of one that makes something hard or wet or hot. But all atoms have the four. Even individual atoms have all four, according to the Abhidhamma school.
Do they believe that Buddhas or Bodhisattvas can see them?
Can do what?
It can see the Sara in people?
I haven't seen anything about it. I don't... Buddhas can see it because it's a thing. Bodhisattvas they don't talk about much. They do have the word bodhisattva, but I you know, They don't describe them much. Now, could a person seeing emptiness maybe see it or something?
Yeah, like a stream enter.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't talk. I've checked. Mm. I don't remember anything like that. Okay, we should.
And they're layered on top of each other if you take a lot of different
values. Yeah, and this evening I was reading this thing. It's in a great Sakya commentary. The Sakya commentary is to this. I don't remember anything like that. Okay, we should.
And they're layered on top of each other if you take a lot of different
values. Yeah, this evening I was reading this thing. It's in a great Sakya commentary. The Sakya commentary is to this. The one Sakya commentary that is the best in the universe. And he says that there was a big argument about whether it would make you, you know, if you add more deeds, would you get heavier or fatter? They piled on. And he says, no, it's just like more light. And it doesn't have any effect. You can't measure it by weight or by how, you know, it's not like the person gets bigger as these cloaks get piled on. He says, not like that. And then he says, sero. Sero means they claim. And Vasubandhu, at the end of the verses that he knows are false in the Abhidhamma Kosha, he puts this naro, which means they say. You know, so that's a code for all. He was a Mahayana person. You know, he identifies for you the verses where he doesn't really accept what they're saying. But he records it quite nicely. Okay, Kaila, you're the unze for the ending.
Quick question. Does these five reasons apply to both communicating and not communicating?
Yeah.
No. No, only not communicating.
Communicating is normal.
This is the end of Class 2.